Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hi, this is Jason Anderson from the CSC. Today we're talking with Joe Manzari from the American Enterprise Institute. Joe recently broke a story along with his co-author Seth Cooper, a former program officer with the Center for Science and Culture, on a startling series of decisions by the newly elected Dover, Pennsylvania School Board surrounding the teaching of intelligent design in public schools. This series of decisions incredibly benefited the ACLU and the other plaintiffs' attorneys in the Kitzmiller versus Dover PA case. Listen now as we talk with Joe. Today we're talking with Joe Manzari from the American Enterprise Institute about the Dover, Pennsylvania court case. Now, Joe, can you give me a bit of a recap on what has happened since the decision in Dover?
Yeah, Jason, that sounds great. It actually all started in October of 2004 when Dover became kind of the first school district in the nation to explicitly mention intelligent design as an alternative theory. And the school board in Dover voted 6-3 to read a statement to students that said something like, quote, students will be made aware of gaps/problems in Darwin's theory of evolution, and there are other theories of evolution, including but not limited to intelligent design. Note, origins of life will not be taught. And so the book of Pandas and People was placed in the library as a reference, and teachers were to read the statement about the gaps in Darwin's theory. Now, that's in October of 2004, and in December of 2004, a couple months later, 11 parents joined with the ACLU and the Americans United for Separation of Church and State to file a federal lawsuit against the board claiming that it had religious motives for putting that policy in place. So that was December of 2004. It wasn't until September of 2005, that next year, that the trial in Dover, Pennsylvania actually got started. And so it lasted from September to November. And so November 4th is actually when the closing arguments were made for the case. And so then that means the trial was done and now is in the hands of Judge Jones to write an opinion. And so 4 days after the closing arguments, the Dover School Board, which had obviously voted to put this policy in place, had an election. And 8 of the 9 seats were up for re-election, and all of them went to a slate which opposed the ID policy and ran on a platform of fiscal conservatism. So the slate that won was actually called Dover Cares, which stands for Citizens Actively Reviewing Educational/Economic Strategies. So that was 4 days after the case was closed.
So the biggest concern there, the biggest concern for the folks in Dover, you think, was they were afraid how much this was going to cost them.
Right. So immediately, the small town in Pennsylvania is getting international attention, and you have big lawyers from the ACLU and Americans United coming into town, and you can kind of just smell the tension in the air. You know that this isn't going to be cheap. And so people are wondering, well, how are we going to pay for this? And so when you get this plot, or you get the slate that says, you know what, this is a bad policy and we can't afford this, so we're going to try and vote it down and get rid of it, obviously everybody in the community jumps up to vote for that. So they all 8 of those 9 seats went to the Dover Cares people.
Mm-hmm. So they ran on a platform of fiscal conservatism where this was going to cost us. We're not going to get into this kind of fight. This isn't the right kind of fight for Dover,
right,
regardless of whether or not we agree with the curriculum. This is going to be costly.
Exactly.
And then what happened in the aftermath? In your article, yours and Seth Cooper's article with American Enterprise, what did you find? And also tell me what has been the reaction to your article.
Yeah, so on November 4th when the case was closed and December 20th when Judge Jones gave his opinion, in that in-between time was the first meeting of this new Dover School Board, which was all filled with all the people on the slate of Dover Cares. So now the slate, which ran on a really strict platform of fiscal conservatism and being opposed to this ID policy, at their December 5th meeting, which was their first meeting, the policy came up for a vote, and the Dover School Board voted to keep the policy. And so this struck many people as odd because they're wondering, I mean, you'd think that their first order of business would be to slam that down.
Because they ran on a platform of fiscal conservatism.
And getting rid of that policy. So it seemed kind of strange, and so people really weren't sure what was going on, and it wasn't until a couple months later that the actual minutes of that meeting were posted. But That was December 5th when they did that vote, and it was December 20th when Judge Jones came out with his opinion ruling against the people who supported the ID policy. And so what happened to the Dover School Board was that they had to pay $1 million to the ACLU because they voted to keep the policy. So what we were basically showing in our article is that there's a very strong case that if the school board at that December 5th meeting, if they voted down the ID policy, they could have avoided paying that $1 million in legal fees.
But they chose to keep the policy, even though they ran on a completely contrary platform.
Exactly. So, and critics have been saying to our article, they've been saying, well, there's virtually no chance that, you know, the case would have been mooted no matter what they would have done. But recently, Michael Francisco on a website called evolutionnews.org just wrote an article basically talking about how if you take a careful look at the law, it shows that there's actually a strong case for the dismissal of the ID policy and that they could have actually avoided these legal fees.
Well, let me ask you this. In your article, you pointed out that the fellow who came to the meeting had consulted with attorneys, correct? The fellow who came to the meeting
correct.
Saying, let's drop this policy, had actually consulted with local attorneys, and that's where he came up with, if we drop this policy, there's a good chance that we won't have to pay.
That's right. So at that first meeting, a gentleman by the name of David Napierski, who was actually one of the old board members, came up and said, hey, you know, regardless of what's happened, we can kind of see what's coming up on the Hill, and we're going to have to pay a lot of money. So he actually procured a legal opinion. So he went and consulted attorneys, and they all informed him. They said, yeah, if you guys get rid of this policy now, you guys will vastly increase your chances of having to pay the lawyers and things like that. But they dismissed what he said. And on December 20th, they got the ruling, and then the people of Dover had to pay $1 million.
So that's a very fascinating situation. And, of course, you said on the other side, folks have tried to claim that legal counsel that he received was incorrect.
Yeah, this is what's really interesting. That's why I recommend that people read Michael Francisco's piece, because it goes through Supreme Court precedent and things like that, showing how there's a really good chance that they could have mooted the case and avoided the legal fees. So it just shows that it's interesting that the new board put their hope in Judge Jones that he would rule in favor of the policy that they themselves rejected. So basically the big question left on everybody's mind is, if there's nothing to be lost by rescinding the policy,
which they ran against,
right, and there would not even be a slight chance of success, that it would have led to the advantage that they wouldn't have had to pay these legal fees. So I would definitely recommend that people check out the piece, because for a small school district like Dover, $1 million isn't small change.
So no, it's an incredible amount of money.
Yeah, so it's definitely something to be wary of and something to check out.
Hey, this is Jason Anderson from the CSC. Just want to add a couple words to our interview and to encourage you to visit evolutionnews.org to read Michael Francisco's article and articles by others on the ACLU-Dover connection. Two things to point out. Number one, the ACLU was shopping for a case that would set precedents against intelligent design. The Dover case offered a perfect opportunity to do so, inasmuch as the folks on the Dover School Board were motivated by creationism rather than intelligent design. And they thought, the ACLU that is, thought that one case in a small district or otherwise would set the tone for the rest of the country. They thought wrong. The book Traipsing into Evolution by Discovery Institute Press goes into the problems with Judge Jones' decision in the Dover case and why it has not set legal precedents against intelligent design. Number two, I want to point out, as Joe Manzari does in his article available at evolutionnews.org, that one of the plaintiffs in the ACLU's case against the Dover School Board was actually one of the new school board members that voted to keep the very policy that he ran against. The result? $1 million worth of legal fees split between the ACLU and the other attorneys for the plaintiffs against the Dover School Board. I'm Jason Anderson for IDTF at the CSC in New Mexico. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Pennock. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com. Views of guests on ID the Future do not necessarily represent those of the Discovery Institute.